Good morning, everybody. Morning, afternoon, evening. Welcome back to The Chat. On this today, we're going to be talking about the impacts of international relations at the Pacific Islands, whether it's Micronesia, Melanesia, or Polynesia. We're going to be talking, discussing, chatting, debating, whatever you like to say. So, my name is Adonai Orzuma, and I'm here with my colleagues and co-host.
I'm Colin Combs.
And I'm Anabella Diaz.
And let us begin with the chat. Colleen, take it away.
All right, I'm Colin Combs, and I did Melanesia. Melanesia starts at New Guinea and the surrounding islands, and it trenches all the way down to Fiji and goes all the way, it goes all the way up to Fiji and goes all the way down to New Caledonia. They were not sailors like the other Pacific Islanders. Melanesians who live on the Solomon Islands can carry the non-European gene for blonde hair called TYRP1. Even though the Aboriginal Australians aren't technically considered Melanesians, the groups that initially populated Papua New Guinea and Australia, the Sahul, probably already arrived from Southeast Asia at roughly the same time. These two groups have a genetic markers in common that are not found outside of Melanesia. They were traditionally aggressive towards strangers as they preferred near-neighbor partnerships. Settling of Melanesia. Archaic Papuans became isolated from each other after arriving from Southeast Asia thousands of years ago, settling New Guinea and the Bismarck and Solomon Island chains on bamboo log rafts or dugout canoes. What they did is called island hopping from one visible island to the next. The Trans New Guinea language family is the third largest language family on Earth, yet its speakers make up only 0.05% of the world's population. The first Austronesians to populate Melanesia brought with them not only their culture, but the distinctive pottery style by which their early culture would be named. With the arrival of the Austronesians, archaic Papuan culture was transformed into Melanesian culture. Lapita pottery has been found mainly on coastlines, which explains why inland New Guinea was unaffected by their culture and languages. But to the coastlines of Melanesia, the Lapita culture brought, in addition to the pottery, language, tools, ornaments, animal domestication, permanent villages of stilt houses, new fishing techniques, and sophisticated seafaring skills and vessels. Towards the late 19th century and early 20th century, the British imported tens of thousands of indentured Indians to Fiji to work with sugar plantations. This is when labor recruitment in Greater Melanesia soon became human trafficking. One unexpected benefit of labor recruitment for the region was the development of common languages for Melanesia. Pidgin, Bislama, and Tok Pisin were separate indigenous languages developed by the Greater Melanesians in their exile, containing 80 to 90% English. During World War I, many Pacific Islanders fought in the war. It was primarily Australian and New Zealand Army Corps or ANZAC, which awakened a kind of national pride within the Pacific Islanders. It created a feeling of shared Pacific uniqueness with other serving Pacific Islanders. This went hand in hand with the Melanesians' aggressive and warrior lifestyle. Around this time, progressive came slowly to Melanesia because of isolation, enormous social and linguistic diversity, and difficult climate. British New Guinea began to explode with colonists and planters in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Australian Albert Murray became the new lieutenant governor in 1906, working closely with the Christian missions to improve Papuans' welfare, but overall maintaining traditional regimens while suppressing only the most aberrant practices. Later on, warfare was banned and replaced with organized games, in particular rugby and cricket. World War II. At the start of the war, Japan had ruled the majority of Melanesia and Micronesia. U.S. Marines disembarking from an LCVP on Guadalcanal in August of 1942. Solomon Islanders daily risked their lives as coast watchers with radio transmitters reporting from behind enemy lines to transmit vital information and rescue Allied personnel. John F. Kennedy was rescued by a Solomon Islander whose name is Buko Gaza and Irani Kumana. Fiji and Samoa were advanced staging area for the U.S. military as well. And what Melanesia is like today? Today, Melanesia is a vibrant and dynamic region rich with people and resources not seen in other parts of the world. Today, the population of Melanesia is approximately 10 million people who live, work, and participate in the global economy while still maintaining deep cultural traditions that distinguish them from their Pacific Island counterparts. In places throughout Melanesia, the physical body provides a space in which traditional designs and colors are imprinted throughout elaborate face and body paintings, wigs, headdresses, masks, and costumes. Artwork was essential to indicate statures, honor individuals, or function as gifts. Christianity also remained strong throughout Melanesia, with many leaders having been educated in mission schools, and large numbers of professed Christians can be found in all walks of life. The impact of Christianity in traditional life ways, however, has been profound, with many rituals and beliefs replaced by Christian dogma and practices. Economically, a number of multi-transitional corporations are operating in Melanesian states, bringing additional changes. Logging and mining are major industries, especially in places like Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands. Political unrest linked to mining throughout has occurred in Bougainville, demonstrating dissatisfaction with agreements between landowners, governments, and corporations. The changing economic scene has also impacted social organization, turning them into hierarchical societies with politicians, public servants, and business people making up an economic elite. That has been Melanesia. Now with Annabella with Polynesia.
So, like Conrad said, I'm focusing on Polynesia, debatably one of the most popular regions of Oceania. And he had mentioned most of my topics also, including the more military aspect of the islands. And just like Micronesia and Melanesia, the trade industry and Europeanization were one of the main things that really affected these islands. And with the trade industry growing, and having the whaling and labor recruitment and blackbirding, it had significantly affected the Pacific Islanders, where they were being kidnapped and into slavery and trafficked. And as Europeanization had grown and the unification of Germany had grown, it had just severely impacted the islanders, where these islands were not just trading grounds anymore, but turning into women and children coming here and turning these unquote muddy settlements into colonial towns and now known as the White Pacific. And as this had grown, like I said, the unification of Germany and the more military aspect of this had grown, and as Pearl Harbor had gotten attacked, the construction of U.S. bases onto these islands had grown too, including Samoa and Fiji, like Colin had stated. But even though as the Europeanization had grown, it was in a way good for the islands, smallly, because it had advanced Samoa in a way. It gave employment to the islanders. It had, in a way, just and impacting it severely and enhancing sanitation for the islanders, giving electricity and the material goods. With that, we can say that even though these good things had come out of it, there was also a largely negative aspect to this of the Europeanization, where there was a lot of governments overthrown, specifically Hawaii and Queen Liliuokalani, where she was stripped away of her power. And to this day, Hawaii still suffers with their land rights and arguing that this was stolen land. And America's impact on Hawaii has still been significant. As we can see, Hawaii is still a part of our states. And with that, islander population has reduced by pandemics, intermarriage, low birth rates, and Hawaii has been significantly westernized. And even with these negative aspects, there were still good that came from Europeanization, where there were Protestant missionaries coming to each of the regions and and helping with the language and unifying each of the islands and becoming a more
unified?
Yes, unified. It unified them and brought them together where they had a more constant ground and a more structurable government. I don't know how to explain it.
I mean, this is not English class, but you're good.
Just helping keeping things constant and just helping with the islanders with language and keeping them unified. So that's all I have. So we can go on to Zuma with, I think, Micronesia.
Yes.
Zuma here, everyone. Okay, so when you think about Micronesia, what are you going to think? A bunch of coral atolls stuck in the middle of literally nowhere of the Pacific Ocean? Well, no, not really, because Micronesia actually played a huge, huge role in United States getting involved in the wars. But moving on from that, before that, the League of Nations actually awarded most Micronesian islands, those atolls, to Japan. So they were under Japanese, I don't want to say occupation, because the League of Nations actually gave them to Japan for Japan to develop them. Whatever. Anyways, so fast forwarding a couple of years, we move on to World War II. America gets involved in the war. America has the Northern Mariana Islands, and America has Guam on its way to the Philippines. We have islands such as Nauru, Tuvalu, which aren't really known for much, but getting to that, most of Micronesia doesn't really have the cultural history that you'd find of Fiji having its own Hindi language, or the size and resources of Australia and New Zealand, but Micronesia does have strategic importance. So, let's see. That is seen during the war when America needed to build more bases to gain access to Japan. These bases would be lying in Guam, which is not that far from Japan, or the Northern Mariana Northern Mariana Islands, which is that far from Japan at all. But when we're talking about its economy standpoint, one of the islands that stick out would be the island of Nauru now. Nauru is a small island, is a small atoll, is 21 square kilometers. It's not that big. It has about 10,000 people. Now, what Nauru was known for was having the largest GDP per capita, gross domestic product. Its economy was mostly mining phosphorus. Now, phosphorus is when birds literally use the island as a bathroom. I'm not kidding, I'm serious. When birds use the island as a bathroom, those deposits harden up and that becomes valuable for some reason. So the islanders invested most of their money getting bulldozers, construction equipment to mine this phosphorus and ship it out. Now, that was good, except for the part they were actually destroying their only island, the interior of the island. So most people lived on the outer ring road of said island. The interior was uninhabitable. The mining destroyed any chances of them aerating the land, so most of their food had to be imported, mostly from the United States. And with that would be fatty, canned, salty, acidic foods. And mixing fatty foods with Polynesian genes, that wasn't good, because that led to a lot of obesity. 94% of the island would become obese, having hypertension, diabetes, high blood pressure, which is hypertension, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, so around 2008 was when their highest economy was. Their GDP, gross domestic product per capita, was about 21 million. Now, most of that was squandered when the government, A, didn't put any reserves for it, so, and B, decided to, quote unquote, diversify their investment by investing in a British production of Leonardo, which it was a loss. They lost about $7 million, $4 million from investing, and another $3 million due to mismanagement of their money, which is kind of sad. That hurt them, that crippled them. The only way of making economy now, breaking even commerce, is, well, they had a controversial deal with Australia, which Australia wanted to set up a detention camp on the island, which in return they would give them economic aid. So they literally went from an island where they would buy a car one day, have fancy jewelry in their hands one other day, to selling out their Polynesian, Micronesian, Melanesian inmates who wanted to migrate to Australia. And that's how the economy works now in Nauru. We're all happy. We are not happy about that whatsoever, but whatever. That's how the world works. Anyways, thank you for joining us in the chat. We'll see you later. Bye.